wrapping gifts at the Barnes & Noble the other day, and we're doing this for raising funds for Ask an Atheist. And there was a woman who came up to us, and she looked a little apprehensive. She said, I would like to get some presents wrapped, but I can't support an atheist organization.
Dun, dun, dun! Like,
okay, that's fine. You know, what we do, I don't know what you think we do, but we have a radio show where we talk to people and we tell them, you know, what atheists are really like, because there's a lot of misconceptions. There's a lot of, you know, negative impressions of people who don't have a God. And so we do that. We also advocate for church-state separation. And she lights up. She goes, oh, my God, I am such an advocate of church-state separation. I am a science teacher from Houston. From there on out, we were blabbing our heads off, and we just ended up wrapping her gifts, and she threw some money in the pot. It was really, really awesome. So why was I over there wrapping gifts at Barnes & Noble?
Well, it's something that we're doing to raise funds for our show to help keep us on the air. That does cost money. So we are at the South Center Barnes & Noble in Tukwila. We're going to be there throughout the next week. Check out our website, askanatheist.tv. You can find out when they're there. Drop a couple bucks in our jar and just help us out. I mean, this costs money. This keeps us on the air. So, yeah, you're donating to poor people, namely us.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be there tomorrow wrapping gifts.
And, if you would like your gifts wrapped by the great Sam Mulvey.
Yeah.
Uber famous Mike Gillis, or even myself. Go on down there.
Sam, I thought your dad was the great Sam Mulvey.
Yeah, he's really more the great Sam Mulvey than I am. A slightly longer track record. And if you like comedy, yeah, watch me wrap your gift. It'll be great.
Speaking of comedy.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, we've got a comedy show coming up. You guys remember the last time we did that? What a fantastic show that was.
It was a great time, and the comedians who participated loved us. They were able to make jokes and have them make it across that normally they didn't get. So this is going to be a very interesting comedy event. This will be December 29th in the Holiday Interregnum at the Jewel Box Theater on 2322 2nd Avenue in Seattle, of all places.
That's Belltown, for those of you who don't know addresses.
Indeed. And this will be Ask an Atheist, The War on New Year's, and we will be featuring three comics, the first of which should be familiar to those of you who follow Ask an Atheist. It's Jeremy Whitman. He's a national touring comic and a co-creator of Ask an Atheist. We also have Kermit Apio, the winner of the 2009 Great American Comedy Festival, and he has had numerous appearances on television and radio. He has showcased at comedy festivals in Aspen, Las Vegas, and Vancouver, and has performed in 47 states and 3 Canadian provinces. I love all the names of the Canadian stuff. I just...
I love Canadians.
I like, oh yeah, obviously. Yeah. Kind of nearby, yeah. And I love that it used to be called the Dominion. That makes it sound like vaguely Star Trek.
But, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Like a million years ago.
You're going to be assimilated.
Yeah, Canadian. And now somebody's going to tell me that I make fun of Canadians when I, you know, that's how this works.
Oh, yeah.
He's a past winner of the Seattle Comedy Competition and was a semifinalist in the San Francisco Comedy Competition. Also, we have just announced we have Kathy Sorbo, who has appeared on shows produced by HBO and Showtime, and she developed a pilot for MTV. The U.S. Comedy Arts Festival in Aspen said of Kathy, Sorbo rips into her work with such humor and insight that her act appeals to just about everybody. Kathy's credits also include national voiceover work for radio and television ads, as well as performing at corporate events for clients ranging from Microsoft to the U.S. Army. Kathy has been a regular performer on PR's new satire show Rewind and is a sideline announcer for the Rat City Roller Girls.
Which I've actually seen. I love going to see the Rat City Roller Girls, and she's the sideline announcer, which means she runs up and down the stairs all over Key Arena while the game is going, and she'll get people during the break. She'll say, all right, everybody cheer for the Grave Danger section over here. And, you know, she'll give away things, have people stand up, say happy birthday to their 9-year-olds. She has got so much energy, and she is so witty and so much fun. It's absolutely going to be a great show.
So once again, Ask an Atheist, The War on New Year's Eve. And that'll be $20 at the door, or you can get tickets online at Brown Paper Tickets. And you can see the full link to that at askanatheist.tv.
You are listening to Ask an Atheist. My name's Deanna Joy Lyons. I'm your host for today. With me are Sam Mulvey and Mike Gillis.
Hey.
Hey. Our phone number is 253-584-1480 if you want to call and talk to us. So what are we doing today with Scripture Says? What?
Yeah, we are going back to the wonderful and, I guess you could say, humorless, angry world of Islam.
Ooh.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. You already know what it's probably going to be. So this look at the funny, the scary, and the just plain weird passages in humanity's holy text comes from listener Paul from Brisbane, Australia. Paul sends us, this is actually from the Quran, chapter 23, verse 1 through 6 of the Yusuf Ali translation from 1938. It says as follows. The believers must eventually win through, though those who humble themselves in their prayers, who avoid vain talk, who are active in deeds of charity, who abstain from sex, except with those joined to them in the marriage bond, or the captives to whom their right hand possesses, for in their case they are free from blame.
So can I just get this out of the way for just a second? He said right hand.
Yeah. For the captive right hand, is that what that was?
It can't get away, poor
right.
thing.
Fair
so if you're playing along at home, basically it says that you can be a good person, you're a believer, you're a good guy, provided that you abstain from sex except for a woman that you're married to, or a woman that you own as property having forcibly taken them after a battle.
You know, this doesn't specifically say a woman, it says the captives. That could actually apply to anybody.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
but I can imagine that, based on the mythology, that you don't take a male hostage.
That's yeah. true. That's true.
And,
pretty
you
common.
Know, clearly the idea that, you know, women and sex, or women and captives and sex are all kind of melded together and are kind of the same thing in these Bronze Age mythologies.
That's
and that
true.
Needs to be said.
Women are spoils. Women are possessions, just like slaves are. So even your wife isn't, you know, an autonomous person. She
right.
is basically kind of a slave that, you know, you paid a little more for.
Yeah, she's just the trophy slave for the most part.
Oh. Burn.
Oh. Yeah, so if you're somebody who has a piece of scripture, be it funny, weird, unusual, or just plain scary, you can go to our website, askanatheist.tv, hit the big red candy-like shiny button, send it to us, make sure you give us a scripture in verse. We might read it on the air, and just for reference, non-biblical ones always get moved to the front of the line, because we get a lot of Bible quotes.
Yeah, there's a lot in the Bible to talk about.
To be honest, we've all been through the scriptures of the Bible so much, too, that we kind of love the variety. Been, you know, eating nothing but McDonald's, now we want to go to Taco Time.
Yeah, yeah, or the ice cream shop has 31 flavors. We should get away from the one or two that we're used to.
Absolutely. So I bet most of you guys have heard about the Catholic League and Bill Donahue, bless his crazy little heart.
That kind of suggests that Bill Donahue and the Catholic League are two different things. I am really convinced that the Catholic League is really just his stage name.
I think you're right. I don't think anybody else is involved. It's just him putting out a crazy press release every once in a while.
Have I told you guys my theory about Bill Donahue and the Catholic League?
No.
That I believe that he has some backroom wager with someone else, and that he bets that he can come up with the worst possible defense of the Catholic Church. And then he's like, oh no, that's not the worst one. I've got an even better one.
Oh, so someday he's going to come out and say, guess what, guys? It was all a joke.
I really hope so.
I hope so, too. That'd be great.
Eventually, they're just going to replace the front page of the Catholic League website with the troll face. Is that the idea?
I hope so. It's one of those things where somebody is so crazy that you hope that there's a candid camera moment coming at the end of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, if you're not familiar with Bill Donahue in the Catholic League, he really is the guy who comes to the worst defense of the Catholic Church. I remember that when there was that discussion of, what was his name, Lawrence Murphy in Wisconsin, who had potentially raped up to 200
wow.
deaf children
yeah.
in his care over the course of a couple decades. He actually made the argument, and you might want to sit down because you're going to lose your balance when you hear this, that it wasn't actually child molestation because they were over the age of adolescence. Therefore, the problem was homosexuality.
Oh, Bill Donahue.
It completely derailed the discussion panel that he was on CNN, and it suddenly became a question of, oh, when is it child molestation? Where does that line end? Here's a question. How about, it's not okay. Let's just give you the argument. It's not child molestation, even though I don't believe it. It's just regular rape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the Catholic League is in the news this week because they've got this new idea that they're going to adopt an atheist to see if that there are, in this holiday season, in the reason for the season, blah, 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 they've got this idea that they're going to adopt an atheist to see if there are, you know, crypto Christians in the midst of the atheist movement. And they don't really get into how they're going to adopt these atheists other than spamming the box of the offices of American Atheist. So, or atheists. So.
Because that method has been so effective so far.
Yeah, it's obviously really worked. So I wrote a letter to the Catholic League, actually volunteering to be adopted by someone who works for the Catholic League. I'm hoping it's not Bill Donahue. I don't really have much to say to the
guy. He's pretty much the only guy in the Catholic League.
Yeah, I know. So my letter goes a little bit like this. Dear Catholic League, first of all, I would like to congratulate you on successfully getting your message out to the atheist community. It practically flooded my social media sites for 2 days. Congratulations. My name is Sam Mulvey, and I'm a producer and host for Ask an Atheist, a show we run up here in Tacoma about atheism, skepticism, and the separation of church and state. I've been some variation of agnostic or atheist for most of my life, and for the remainder, I was rarely something you could be called a Christian. I'd like to volunteer for your adoption drive. However, you say that David Silverman has it backwards about Christians not knowing that there are atheists in their community, and I find that confusing. Allow me to explain. While the Dominionist concept of a Christian nation is a fiction, I can't pretend that the social fabric of our country isn't dominated by people of a Christian faith. The statistics you mention in your press release are well known to those of us in the atheism visibility movement. So in that context, I find it a little baffling that there might be Christians in our midst of our smallest movement that do not have the opportunity to express their potential faith. Even in our relatively secular corner of the nation, there's a church on every street. On my radio station, almost every program before or after mine is of a Christian bent. I've also noticed a burgeoning market for ex-atheists in the church circuit these days. I have to admit that it looks as honest as the ex-Satanists we saw in the 80s, but I'm sure the modern crowd considered themselves atheists in some way. It seems like there are nigh-infinite opportunities for someone to leave the atheist social fabric. We have no structure, we have no ability to count our ranks, and we have no authority over our fellow atheists to keep them in the fold. If there's fear keeping non-atheists in the atheist movement, it's fear instilled in them by the clergy or the faithful, or the social ostracism they experienced when they made the choice to become an atheist. But I digress. Maybe you believe that some of us hold Christian ideals that we do not know are uniquely Christian. I still find that hard to believe, but it's a lot better than that other nonsense I've mentioned earlier. I try to have some humility about myself, but please allow me to say this. More than once, I've had Christians in my life who found it shockingly hard to believe that I'm not a Christian. While I make mistakes, same as anyone, my Christian friends have described me as a good moral person, and they actually find it surprising that I'm, as they describe it, such a nice guy. So perhaps these positive things they see about me are a sign that I'm holding some closeted belief in Christianity. Now, I don't believe Jesus is the Son of God, and I don't believe that salvation can be found through him. In fact, I don't believe we have need of salvation or that there is any God at all, so I think it's fair to say that I can identify as an atheist. Furthermore, as a skeptic, there are parts of your sacraments and apologetics that I find pretty repellent. Still, I believe that knowledge, belief, and understanding needs to be tested, and perhaps the people you put in charge of my adoption can see the way through these disagreements. You might imagine I have some ulterior motive for volunteering, and you'd be right. But I'll let you in on the secret right now. I want to show people what we're like. I want to lessen the fear of us by showing people how normal we really are. I want to show them that when we get angry, we have a sensible basis for our anger, but anger is not what defines us. Despite what you may think, I'm not in the market to make theists into atheists. I'm in the market to make theists not hate atheists. There's no need for Catholics to see us as people who believe in nothing, stand for nothing, and are good for nothing in the first place, even without coercing us into something we don't believe in. That might scare you, but imagine what would happen if the Catholic League managed to turn the atheist radio show host into a Catholic. At the very least, we'd clean up on the ex-atheist circuit. I look forward to your reply. Yours, Sam Mulvey.
Hear, hear.
I would like to be adopted, too. I think that'd be really awesome. But did you guys notice in the press release, it doesn't say anything really about how you go about getting adopted?
I think it's going to be something similar to adopting a child that's starving in Africa or something. And instead of sending them food or medicine or money, you know, like a dollar a day.
Yeah.
I think they just pray for you. And I imagine that I remain an atheist if I continue to make my saving throw versus spells.
Yeah, I've got a +4 bonus for that.
Yeah, I was afraid this was going to be AD&D second edition, but I was really hoping that they'd like invite me along and we'd have a talk about, you know, stuff like that. And I really mean that for me to be an atheist means I do have to test what I believe. As an atheist, as a skeptic, as a believer in the scientific method, what I believe and what I stand for needs to be tested against other ideas and other beliefs to make sure that they're true. I mean, this is how you sharpen your ideas.
This is how you know what your ideas even are.
Yeah.
I actually took a philosophy class a few years back, and one of the things that they had you do is actually explain why murdering a small animal was wrong.
Yeah.
This is something that, you know, in our culture, we have a tendency to treat this as self-evident, that this is, oh, it's just so obvious. That's not an answer, and that's not an answer we accept from religious people when we ask them why they believe what they believe. And they say, oh, it just is. It's so obvious.
Right.
Clearly, it's not. So when you're forced to take something that you believe, something that you feel is obvious, and have to actually articulate why you believe it, you actually understand your beliefs better, and your beliefs actually mean something. They're not just something that you parrot, something that you've repeated, something that another person who maybe is more articulate and more persuasive has just kind of cut-pasted onto you, but it's become actually your ideal, something you've actually thought through. And you can only do that through, you know, testing your ideas against ideas that conflict with them.
Ultimately, what I think that means is that as atheists and as skeptics and as believers in the scientific method, we're willing to do something that Bill Donahue isn't. We're willing to admit that we're wrong. And I encourage the Catholic League and anybody who would want to work with the Catholic League to actually meet my challenge and, you know, adopt me for a season. And let's have that conversation.
Absolutely. If we don't challenge and we don't talk about what we believe, we don't learn anything. We don't change. I mean, I know, Sam, you and I have had really spirited, awesome arguments.
Absolutely.
Over and over again. We end up practically yelling at each other over our beers.
Yeah.
And I've learned and changed my mind on things so many times. Sometimes just because in talking about it, I go, why do I believe that? Wait a second. I just said something that was, you know, that I believe to be true, but maybe I'm not right because Sam doesn't seem to think that's true.
And it's likewise as well, is that we had a very spirited conversation over peers and over beer. And when I came home, I actually woke Becky up. And was like, Becky, I have just made a weird realization about my economic politics, and I really want to discuss it with somebody just to see if I'm not absolutely nuts. I kind of was, but it was something I hadn't considered before.
Yeah,
with always the new ideas and stuff, you always have to let them settle a little bit just to make sure that you're not being pulled in another direction by a charismatic figure as well. So I always like to let them stew for a bit. There's always a little bit of a honeymoon period that you have with any idea.
Yeah.
And then you test it out. And it's funny because I think a lot of times an idea is a lot like an umbrella, that either it works when it rains or it just doesn't work.
You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. When we come back from our break, we are going to be talking about our topic, which is how to friend a theist.
Join the Ask an Atheist after party at Doyle's Public House. The Ask an Atheist crew will be there at 5 for good beers, food, and you're invited. You'll find a dozen beers on tap, including Stella, Guinness, Smithwick's Irish Ale, Twisted Thistle IPA, and Fuller's London Porter, as well as dozens of domestic and imported beers and bottles. Join us for Good Atheist Conversation and meet the crew today at 5 at Doyle's, 208 St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma.
Don't believe in God? Join the club. Humanists, atheists, and freethinkers have joined the American Humanist Association since 1941 to advocate for progressive values and equality for non-theists in America. Located in Washington, D.C., the American Humanist Association lobbies Congress on humanist issues, protects the rights of atheists in the courts, and supports more than 140 local chapters. Visit us at AmericanHumanist.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter to learn how you can join the club today.
Did you know that not a single psychic or paranormal event has ever been reproduced?
Have you ever wondered about the effectiveness of faith healing, Reiki, or sports bracelets?
Was 9/11 an inside job, or is that all just another unproven conspiracy theory?
Come check out the Seattle Skeptics, a group focused on lively debates and a critical examination of pseudoscience, alternative medicine, and anything else that hasn't held up to the light of the scientific method.
Seattle Skeptics was created for those who require a higher bar of evidence than gut feelings or blind belief.
We're not contrarians or cynics, we just want to see the evidence.
And so should you.
Check us out at seattleskeptics.org.
That's seattleskeptics.org.
If you enjoy the programming we create here on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship helps keep our show on the air and improve the quality of our broadcasts. Donors get access to exclusive Ask an Atheist content. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
And we're back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. So, Sam, tell us a little bit about our topic today. We are talking about how to friend a theist. Now, normally we talk about, you know, relating to atheists because we are explaining ourselves to the world. But this is sort of our way to communicate maybe with other atheists how to have a productive and happy friendship with them.
Sure. The point of our show is to talk to theists and people who don't know the atheist viewpoint and to give them the opportunity to experience it without it having just magically appear in front of them. It gives them time to think about it and just really consider our opinions. But, you know, I have to admit that there are a lot of atheists who listen to our show, and sometimes it's necessary to address them. And I think that we're all friends with some, you know, it's, the study that we referenced in the last segment was that 80% of Americans are some form of Christian, I believe.
Or close to it.
Or close to it. Ethnically Christian, actual believers, that's up for debate, obviously.
Right.
But they believe that they're Christian. And, you know, that's the world, and we're gonna meet a lot of them. And among the many cute phrases used by the religious that will instantly gain the ire of most of us is love the sinner and hate the sin. we hear that all the time, and it's always annoying. It's always an uncritical assignment of the theist's morality to us, the hapless target of their love. The criticism is always one way, with no examination of the theist's place in judgment of the sinner. I mean, they're standing in for God, or rather, you know, the imaginary one, and they're thinking that they're bringing in the judgment down from on high, and they never see themselves in the place of judge, jury, or executioner.
That's the part I find really offensive whenever I hear that argument, is that it's somebody taking a strong position on something, but also not having to take responsibility for it at the same time.
Yeah.
That they say, you're wrong and horrible and all this, but, oh, I'm just passing it along. This isn't me saying this.
It's kind of like if somebody believes that it is a sin to, I don't know, eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, for instance.
Right.
And they will run around all day condemning other people who eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and what they're doing, there's no reason for that to be wrong, just it's what they personally believe. They go, everybody here is sinners, you're all sinners, sometimes I eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, but it's wrong.
Right.
And, you know, there's no reason to judge that. I'm not a sinner. I don't know what that exactly means to you, but
from our perspective, replace your book replace whatever your holy book is with Archie Comics and see how much sense it, if it makes sense to you, then it might make sense to us.
It's a big appeal to authority, too, and I think that the thing that really offends me, again, that not taking responsibility for the things you say, it just kind of blows my mind. And I think really what it comes down to is it is you saying this. I think that often what somebody does when they say God believes this, God believes it, God says this, God says that, is that God, for most people, good and bad, you know, nice and mean, is just an externalization of the things that they feel, the things that they believe to be true,
yeah,
the things that the opinions they hold. So that a nice person tends to believe in a God that's friendly, and somebody like Bill Donahue, for instance, tends to believe in a God that's just as mean and bigoted as he is.
Now, I'm gonna drop a bomb on you guys, though. You might not like this, but we have our own version of this.
Oh, yeah.
We do.
Oh, I'm certain we do.
And it's love the religious, hate the religion. And, you know, once again, the difference really is the religious versus the religion. The tomes of the big three religions are static documents that represent Bronze Age thinking in all of its horror. We've talked about this a lot. And the people who represent these religions have had to live in, they've had to live in the real world for the, you know, thousands of years between when their book was started and now. And as a result, their beliefs have evolved. I mean, they're less violent. You know, they don't make sacrifices in the way they used to. They don't stone people because they have to interact with real people, and especially people who are not in their religion. And that's something that, you know, that it's specifically addressed in Islam, but it's also an emergent quality of all of the big three religions.
And just to head off any comments in the comments section, we do know that there are parts of the world where people do still do all of these things.
Oh, absolutely. That doesn't mean there isn't the occasional, you know, there isn't the person who will go out and stone a gay person on a Saturday night for kicks, but I'm really talking about America, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, there is a context difference, and I think really what it comes down to is that religion, and this is kind of my theory, I have sort of the goldfish theory about religion, which is that, like a goldfish, it'll grow to fill the bowl that it's been put into, and if you give religion a lot of leeway, a lot of authority, and the ability to kill people, it'll become ugly really fast. It doesn't matter what the religion is.
But I think it's important to be able to tell the difference between the person who's going to stone people and hate adulterers and do bigoted things because their God tells them to, and someone who has decided that their beliefs need to evolve with the times. And I think that's an important thing for atheists to do if they are a person on planet Earth. I mean, let's be honest. The world right now is mostly religious. I mean, I've been called kind of soft on this, and I'm trying to. I've been called an accommodationist, but really I'm kind of an anti-theist.
I find that funny, actually, you being called an accommodationist, because you know what you do week after week is put your opinions out on the air about atheism and about religion, and most people would go, "That guy's a jerk for sharing his opinion."
Sure. I am looking for peaceful coexistence with religion in society, but I still think religion itself is an ethically bankrupt system, and the world would be better, smarter, and more loving without it. You know, I don't think ridding humanity of superstition will solve all of the problems of ignorance or hate. Like I say, religion is the armor that ignorance wears, but I think it will go a long way towards helping.
Absolutely, and that's an accusation that gets thrown our way a lot, and a lot of people who create satires about us. This is one of the things that the Richard Dawkins episode of South Park got absolutely wrong, which is that they projected on him this opinion that there's this silver bullet solution to the world and that we'd live in a utopia if you got rid of religion. I have never met a single atheist who thought that the world would be perfect if religion went away.
Yeah.
It you take religion away, you've got one really convenient excuse that's gone that people generally use to be a jerk to other people.
Yeah.
And when you take that away, it's a lot harder to be a jerk, and you have to take greater responsibility for your actions. But even in that world, people will still be jerks.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we humans, we atheists especially acknowledge that we are human and that we've got, you know, especially those of us who were previously believers of some stripe, we know that we thought things that we now don't think are true. And being able to acknowledge that we are human, we have faults, and we can do things wrong, and we can be awful or we can be very good, I think is a good way to head off that. You know, if we get rid of religion, we're not going to be perfect because we know we're not perfect.
Yeah. There's one thing I want to get. Yeah, I'm going to start getting into how I'm friends with theists. And the first thing I want to say is that this is not universal. There are people who have been harmed by religion, and perhaps they need to be away from religious people for a while. I'm not suggesting that these rules are universal. These are just the rules that I use. And the first one is, I'm not out to convert. I'm not talking about going out and finding religious people to turn into atheists. I'm talking about going out, finding some religious people, and just becoming friends with them. In fact, we're kind of uncomfortable with the concept of conversion.
Yeah, this is something that I've encountered, and maybe it's just because I tend to look at it the same way that if it were directed at me, that if a religious person looks at me as a fixer-upper opportunity, that they don't want to be friends with the me that is, but that the me that they can create. I really find that offensive, and if I ever get the impression that even through conversations where I'm not intentionally trying to turn somebody into a less religious person or more anti-theistic person, if I get the impression that I'm changing their mind, I become somewhat uncomfortable with that, and it's a sort of fear that I'm somehow becoming more like that. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, objectively and intellectually. I know that there's nothing wrong with putting out an argument and successfully convincing somebody. Like, if I believed something about transportation policy, and at the end of my argument, someone is like, "Oh, well, sign your petition." That's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's a good thing. And we are, in some sense, trying to change people's mind about atheists on this show, but we're not trying to turn a theist into an atheist. And sometimes when I get that with a friend, like, I find a friend saying, "Oh, you know, I'm kind of agnostic now," I get this tight feeling in my stomach, and it feels kind of like my goal isn't to try to change you. You were my friend before this.
And I used to be in complete accord with this, and if I could summarize it, is I think we're looking to change people's minds and not their identity. It's really a change in identity is a personal choice, and I don't want to feel like I'm responsible for making other people change who they are.
It's weird because I don't want to change people either, and it was weird because ideologically, I do want people to change. I want religion to. I don't want to ban religion. I don't want to persecute people who are religious. I want these ideas to be. I want ideas that I find abhorrent. I want them to be readily available, and I want them to be discarded.
Right.
I would love religion to curl up and die, not because somebody stomps it out, but because people just don't want it. Yet, and that's the same way I feel about any of my political beliefs, where I've been an activist in the past. Yet, I feel uncomfortable pushing political religious beliefs on my friends. Why do I exempt that? It's just.
Now, what I really want to do is put my ideas out there, and I think you guys can agree, and let people know that there's an alternative to the things that they're thinking, because a lot of times we sort of go through life with the same people who think the same things as us, the same religious ideas or political ideas, and then you hear somebody express something different, you go, "Oh, I could think something different." And that's I think, a big part of what we're doing is we're just putting this out there.
However, my mind has changed in the last 24 hours. Some of the things that I'm talking about are not, you know, just object examples. This is stuff that I've experienced. And I actually asked for permission from my friends to talk about this stuff. And one of the letters I got back really underscores why I think sometimes it's okay if I change somebody's identity or if I'm partially responsible. And I think if I'm going to be more honest. And I got this letter, and it's from a friend of mine. And she told me that she's got no problem with using this group of people as an example of respecting the diversity of insanity. I mean, it's sort of a joke. But then she goes on to say, I do have one request, however. Should you choose to reference me, direct or inferred, I would appreciate it if I was not identified as a Mormon, present tense. The past tense is totally fine. There are still people who do, and I find it increasingly annoying. It is a hard transition, and I'm very happy with who I am now, which, granted, isn't all that different from who I was when I did self-identify as a Mormon, and I'm not ashamed of my history with the religion I had and many positive experiences I've had, so I'm no way trying to disown my affiliation. It's just that it's not now who I am, and I wish people would get that. Now, she didn't say what she was in this, and she certainly didn't say she was an atheist, but and this is a kind of person who, she told me about the Nova special on the Kitzmiller trial, for example. She's an educator, but she's really into science, like the person you referenced at the beginning of the show. And I can't help but feel that I was partially responsible for this, or at least I had a hand in it. I don't want to claim responsibility. This is the difference, is she made this decision after long thought, after years of considering her place in the world and what she believed and what she thought. And if I was part of that exploration, I'm comfortable with that. And I'm actually kind of happy about it. But if somebody comes up to me and says, I listened to your show and now I'm an atheist because you guys are atheists, then I get really, I cringe.
That makes me uncomfortable too. And I guess whenever I hear that, like, I had a friend a couple years ago who said, oh, Mike, I'm an atheist now. And I had that sort of creeping feeling, and that becomes a really important question, because this determines whether I'm comfortable with this or not, which is why. And if they give me a really silly, superficial answer, it's more important to me why somebody believes something, whether they feel they have good evidence, rather than they did it because some charismatic person said it, or they had an authority figure or a conspiracy theory movie told them to, and they told me it was a conspiracy theory movie, and I had this immediate sinking feeling, and I'm like, oh.
You're listening to Ask an Atheist, by the way, 253-584-1480. And I just think I would rather actually somebody say that through listening to your show and your atheist arguments and the things you say skeptically, you've made me even more of a believer and even stronger, believer in UFOs or whatever, because of your arguments. I would almost rather hear that, because I wouldn't want to be responsible for manipulating somebody out of a position. But I do think that's kind of a difference through what we're doing. Like, you're not trying to manipulate your friends into believing something different.
No.
You're just being yourself while being their friend.
I want to exist in this plural community. In this community, there are Mormons, there are Methodists, there are Hindus, there are neo-pagans, there are paleo-pagans, there are lawyers. It's a very diverse group of people intellectually, and I want to be a part of that without making it seem like I'm only there to convert everybody to one way of thinking. That's not what I want.
And sometimes I think that I maybe I'm just overreaching with my fear of being that. Mm-hmm. And that's something I struggle with. This is the contradiction, that I do want religion to curl up and die. I do want people to give it up, but I don't want to feel like I'm some evangelical tool.
Yeah. Well, first things first, my friends need to be comfortable with me as an atheist if I'm going to be friends with them. And that's really their problem more than mine, is people who just won't be friends with atheists. The conversation is over before it begins, but it needs to be said, right?
Yeah, and it's why we have this show in the first place, because that feeling, that immediate reaction is so common. I mean, the woman you spoke to, Deanna, that was not a fundamentalist. That was a science teacher.
She was a very, very liberal believer.
Yeah.
Yet, what was her reaction to the A word?
It was, I can't give money to atheists. She doesn't even know what we're doing.
Well,
but it's a bad reaction.
But here's the thing, is that she had an open mind, listened to what you had to say, and then moved. And
Amen.
Indeed. But that's exactly it. And to me, that's a golden example of changing a person's mind without changing their identity. Then the other thing is, I need the ability for my friends to understand that I'm capable of moral decisions. And not just me, but everybody in that group. Not just so that atheists are capable of moral decisions, but everybody in the world is capable of moral decisions, no matter their ideological basis.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest mistake that a lot of I think believers make it, but I think sometimes we can fall into this trap a little bit too, that, oh, we are the only ones capable of reason. We can fall into that same trap by patting ourselves on the back and saying we've already got it figured out. But I think that we have to always take knowledge as something that's always a current draft.
Yeah.
Rather than that. And I think that the biggest thing you can do is try to say that your ideology, rather than your behavior or the way you treat other people, is the source of morality. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like you were saying, Sam, there is a chasm between the morality of these religious texts and the people who identify with those religious texts, that clearly if the Bible or the Quran was the true source of our morality, human beings under those banners would be a lot worse than they actually are.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, most Christians are against slavery, even though the Bible's for it. Most Christians are against the treatment of women in that way.
Yeah.
And it's because that they're looking at the Bible through the prism of our culture, which is constantly evolving set of morals, rather than this static document that never changes. They're using this conversation of morality as a way that they interpret the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than using, again, there are some crazy people out there, like the Family Research Council.
But I'm not going to friend those guys.
Yeah. So if you're one of those people that does think that this book's a good idea, it's going to be hard to be our friend.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose I should say befriend rather than friend, because otherwise it sounds a bit like Facebook. But
I just have to share that what just popped up on Sam's iPad right now is a Facebook notification.
Yeah,
right
after
you said
admit,
that.
I am a social media lackey, I guess. And really, for that morality leads to my next point, which is the theist really needs to be able to consider the other position. And there's sort of this culture, there's this note in the cultural fabric of the country that if you're not a member of a subgroup of the social fabric, that you can never ever understand what it's like to be that other person. I've heard women say this, I've heard, racial minorities say this, I've heard gay people say this, I've heard atheists say this, and that's the one I don't get the most, to be honest with you. But, I think if we're gonna have a society that understands each other, not only do we have to drop that particular social note, but we need to demand that other people explore, ask questions, have empathy, and think about these things.
And I think that you can draw analogies between the treatment of one persecuted minority and another. It's not going to be a perfect one. I want to make sure that you don't think I'm saying that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that it's perfect, because none of these things are perfect, and I don't want to play the oppression Olympics with anyone to say who's had it worse, and if you haven't had it as bad as this one person, then your problems aren't worth anything. But I guess what I'm saying is that my position as an atheist has helped me be more empathetic or empathic. I don't know how to conjugate that to the plight of other people. That I know what it feels like to be picked on and excluded, and I think that other people in that position could feel that way towards us.
I think this is a good lead-in to our next segment, which is the thing that we will not tolerate from our friends, no matter what their persuasion is.
So, and I think this might be where I get yelled at.
Yay, yelling! You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480, and we'll be right back.
The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state. Community of free thinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. Come celebrate life with us. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking and hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. You can become a member of the Humanists of Washington at humanistsofwashington.org. You'll get our quarterly publication, The Secular Humanist Press. Check out meetup.com, where you can be part of our monthly Seattle dinner and our Heathens Do It Better breakfast. humanistsofwashington.org.
Hey, Ask an Atheist fans and foes. The conversation doesn't stop when our show ends. Visit the official Ask an Atheist discussion forums and have your say on everything from episodes of our show, religious insanity, claims of the supernatural, and even nerdy stuff like comic books or Doctor Who.
The Ask an Atheist forum is the new place to discuss the latest writings of Christopher Hitchens, the latest insanity from the Catholic Church, or even what piece of fruit non-believers are supposed to fear this week. Visit us at forum.askanatheist.tv. Again, that's forum.askanatheist.tv.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide a bajillion dollars in your locker.
Wow, a bajillion dollars?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
Sigmund Freud said, "The voice of the intellect is a soft one, but it does not rest until it has gained a hearing." Whether you're at a point in life where you are questioning your beliefs, or if you've always been an atheist or agnostic, the Auburn Freethought Society is a place where your own voice of intellect will be heard. You'll interact with like-minded people, engage in intellectual conversation, and share your experiences with others in the Auburn, Washington area. At Auburn Freethought Society, we encourage critical thought and reason. For details, find us on Facebook and on Meetup.com. Auburn Freethought Society. Have real discussion and share real ideas. Freely.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We are talking about how to friend a theist. I'm Deanna Joy Lyons, and with me is Mike Gillis and Sam Mulvey.
Hey, hey.
And before the break, we started talking about things that we can't tolerate in our friendships with theists. And Sam, I think you had a really good way to put this.
There's one thing I cannot tolerate in my friendships with my friends. And this is part because I'm an atheist, and it's part because of what I've experienced personally through my life. And I'm going to go a little bit personal on this. And this really toleration of bigotry. And gender is a part of it. Race is definitely a part of it. But the example I'm going to go with is sexual orientation on this one. I've got a friend of mine who is a Mormon. And actually, her and her pagan husband, I did the marriage ceremony for. So I've actually dressed up as a priest. That's why actually I have that outfit I used on that episode for Scam.
Oh, wow.
And the joke was, I mean, they're family. I mean, you know, brother and sister, we're that close. But the joke was, it's a pagan and a Mormon. The only person who isn't going to care about performing that ceremony is going to be the atheist. So let's go to him, right?
That's awesome.
And here's the thing. She's a member of a church that is incredibly anti-homosexual. It's bigoted.
Right.
And I've told her about it. I've said this to her, and she doesn't really dodge it. And she herself is not. She's got gay friends. I mean, our social group is pretty divided on the heterosexual, homosexual. It's like 50%.
Wow.
And she invited a disabled gay guy to move in with her. He's a very close friend of mine, of both of ours. And gay people babysit her kids. And there's none of that bigotry that shows up in the Mormon church in her life, in her life with us. However, she doesn't really stand up in church about it in a significant way.
That would be a huge risk.
Because, I mean, her family, she's one from one of those enormous Mormon families. And because she married somebody outside of the faith, she's already kind of on the outs with the church occasionally. And as a result, she stands to lose a huge part of a social fabric that she really depends on. I mean, we're the other half of that, of course.
Right.
But we're not the only thing in her life. And so she's really afraid of it. In her personal life with us, in the outside world, she stands up, she says, this is not right. But in her church right now, or at least last time I talked to her about it, I have to admit, she kind of kept it mum. So I don't expect my friends to be activists against bigotry. And I would prefer that they would. I'm honestly.
Yeah.
But I expect them in their real life, stand up against it.
Yeah, we talked about this before, and we went a little bit back and forth on this, Sam. And this is something that I am ambivalent about. On one hand, I have to wonder how many people in her church feel exactly the same way.
Not many.
I want to be wrong.
Yeah, I know.
I know I'm probably not, but I think you're right. I think not many, but it means a lot more when somebody from their own insular group says it than us.
Yeah, on one level, I really would prefer that she stand up and talk about it. On another level, I think the entire system is bankrupt anyway, and I would just rather see it go away. It's not like it's a good message with a broken part of it. I think the message is broken, and she knows I feel that way.
And so it's like when the Pope says that he'd rather have the church be pure and tiny.
Yeah.
It's like, good, let it shrink and die.
Please. There's a second-order effect here that I really want to touch on, which is her kids. Her kids are, I met them when they were under a year old. One of them was under a year old. And since then, because they've had so much, experience in dealing with people from alternative sexuality, different sexualities, and they know it. You know, she never hid it from them. That when the elder of the church stands up and says, these people are bad and wrong, her kids are like, no, I know these people. They're fine. There's nothing wrong with them.
They're never going to be entrenched in the church, then.
No. Going to be a problem. On the other hand, I think the church maybe it might change, but you know how it is. And I would really prefer that my friends stand up. But just like with atheism, we don't tell people to come out of the closet unilaterally.
Yeah. But we do tell them to come out if they can, they feel safe to, if they feel comfortable with it. We tell them, come out. We're here waiting for you to be your community, but we don't want people to make huge sacrifices. We don't want them to be, cut off from their communities, losing their jobs, and completely familyless.
If somebody is willing to do that, I have the highest respect for them, but I can't force march somebody into being our Rosa Parks. I can't.
Exactly.
I can't force march. There are people in the Middle East who have atheist blogs and stand up and do that stuff. It is, I don't have the words to describe how brave that is, because they're doing something that I couldn't probably do. I couldn't put my life at risk just to do something that I do on Facebook every day without giving it a second thought.
Right.
I couldn't do that. So I could never try to force somebody else to do that. I don't have the same religious background that your friend does. I never had a life that was tied to a church. So there wasn't anything that could be taken away from me.
Right.
And I, on that level, I would love if there were more people who were brave that way and it would have an impact. But I think that people have to sort of come out as they feel safe. And that the people who have the least to lose and have nothing to lose, those people should come out. That's the only people that I would push, the people who have absolutely nothing to lose by it. But the people who do, the people who could lose their business, the people who could lose their family, let us make it safe for you first.
And I'll be honest with you. I've been kind of a jerk about that a couple times, to be honest with you. We got into a conversation about that. And, it was a kind of an insensitive part of my life, but I said some pretty insensitive things about it. So I'm not saying I'm not completely conflicted, but, or I'm not, I have confliction is what I'm saying. But honestly, she's important to my life and all these people are important to my life. And, I'd like to see that change maybe someday, but I'm not going to push her because, like you say, it's so important.
You care about her. You understand her situation because she's your friend. And you are a good example of somebody who is how to friend a theist
sometimes.
In that situation. We're human. We all screw up.
Yeah.
But friendship goes both ways. And if one friend is doing their thing and you're trying to use them as a chess piece in your activism game, you're not really treating them like a friend.
And that's the other thing, is this is really another big point for me, is the environment of our friendship needs to be non-evangelical.
Right.
Now, here's the thing. If they're, except for like ethnic Christians or people who are just nominally religious because that's what their family is, that's one thing. But I do have friends who really, who are really into being in their, maybe not in their religion, but in their church. I don't know. It gets weird.
It's a huge part of their identity.
It is.
Yeah.
I expect them to talk about it. And because they like me and they like their church or their religion, I expect them to talk it up to me.
Yeah. I mean, it's like having a car that you really love and never mentioning it, never driving it around your friends, never, you have to edit your stories to say, so I was driving, walking down the street the other day. It is a part of who they are, and it's part of who you are, what you believe.
I have occasionally been an open source evangelist. Mm-hmm. You have occasionally been an Aquaman activist. Yes. I mean, it's we all have the things that we want to evangelize, and if religion is an important part of your life, I expect you to talk it up. But not all the time.
And not when somebody tells you to stop.
Yeah, it's one thing when you just want to talk it up occasionally. I mean, in the case of this Mormon, we've actually gone over the Bible together and stuff like that. We've compared notes about the Bible. It's something that we do, and she really wants to show me what she finds important in it, and I love that. On the other hand, if all my friends do is try to convince me that I should be a member of their religion all the time, I cease being a person and I become a mark in a scorecard. And that's not an environment I want to be in.
That's like having a friend who all they want to do is sell Amway to you.
And oh, God.
If you've ever had a friend or coworker who does that, it's intolerable. And you just spot them and you're like, oh, not again. And it becomes that thing. And that's the thing that, Tim Tebow is the football player is making a big noise about he's being persecuted.
Right.
Tim Tebow, you're not being made fun of because you're Christian. You're being made fun of because you lay it on so thick and you won't shut up about it.
Yeah, if he talked about anything else, it would be fine, but it's just all he's about all the time.
Football is not a sport known for its secularism.
Yeah, that's true. It's not like he's, you know, the lone dissenting voice.
Yeah.
He's just the loudest one in a pool of everybody saying the same thing.
But his religion becomes the way that people mock him when he's kind of a jerk and they manage to one-up this guy.
I'm waiting for somebody to put the Darwin fish underneath their eyes with that stuff just and then face off against him. I think that would be fun to watch.
That'd be a great photo, at least.
Yeah.
Because he's putting what is that stuff that you put under your eyes that blocks out the sun?
You call it something black.
Mascara?
Face black.
Mascara.
It's got a name.
Is he like Alice Cooper? No, it's stuff you do to stop the sun from getting in your eyes when you're playing football, and he has a tendency to scribble little Bible passages on there, and I would be tempted if I was on his team and he was doing that crap all the time to put like Deuteronomy 25:11-12 on that. Look it up.
Okay, I'm not making fun of sports people. I love baseball, but I'm just trying to show how unathletic I am by not knowing what that stuff is.
And there are some people that I've had in my life that all they ever do is you can tell that they're being extra nice to you, that they're hanging out with you, that they're, you know, they're really spending a lot of their energy. They don't want to be with you because they like you. They want to hang out with you because they know that eventually they can save you. And it comes from a good place. Like they don't want to. Another
sometimes
person.
It does.
Sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes it does. Actually, there have been.
I don't want you to go to hell.
Yeah, there have been friends of mine, or, you know, who I've had to distance myself from, who were willing to try and see it from my point of view, were willing to believe that I came from a moral background, who weren't willing to tolerate bigotry and might have even been activists about it, but they were so concerned with trying to save my soul that it put a huge strain on our relationship and it was very difficult to be friends with them.
Yeah, friendship's a two-way street, and this is the sort of thing that you have to do, is that if you have things that there are things right now about your best friends that annoy you. Everyone has this. Everyone is annoying to their friends in some way. And the truth is that when you're really somebody's friend, you move past it. And in a weird sort of way, those annoyances become oddly endearing. And it's your ability to move past that stuff that makes you friends. I've had it where, you know, my friends know that if they talk to me and they disagree with me about religion, then occasionally I'm going to rant about some stuff.
Yeah.
And it means that I'll put up with them when they're a little annoying to me, and sometimes we argue. And if these people are really my friend, those don't become fights. They become really fun conversations.
And in the social group I'm thinking of, there are people who appreciate my rants, and there are people who tolerate my rants. And I think, like, the latter group is bigger than the former group, but still, you know.
You're listening to Ask an Atheist, by the way, 253-584-1480. And if you don't mind, I found this great article on Bible.org. It's by Christians, How to Be Friends with an Atheist. And, you know, they just says, should Christians have unbelieving friends? And they say, the statistics are clear. Once the average person becomes a believer in Christ, he or she loses contact with all unbelieving friends within 2 years. Now, I don't think that's true. I think they're just being hyperbolic there.
Can I interject too?
Oh, please.
if you really want to be our friends, don't use words like unbeliever, because unbeliever is purple prose, and it sounds like the sort of thing a Scooby-Doo villain uses. You know, infidel!
Unbeliever!
Unbeliever!
Well, we use the word infidel to describe ourselves, so
yeah,
that might be
in jest.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it is in jest, though. The thing is, these people are being dead serious.
Okay, if it's used in the same spirit, that's okay.
If you're teasing us as a friend, go for it. But if you're really being serious, we just laugh at you.
Yeah. Well, they say that there are, that Christians actually should have unbelieving friends. And they give several reasons why Christians should be intentional about having friends that, as they say, do not know Christ. And one heading is they are sick and in need of hope. Now, see, this is, of course, one of those tropes that we, you know.
They're already outside of my bounds.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we'll skip over that one because we know, and you know, listening, if you've heard us before, we are not sick and in need of hope. We're decent people.
We're not a fixer-upper opportunity.
Exactly. But one of the things they do say that I like is they say they keep you real, having unbelieving friends, and for us as atheists, having believer friends, because we have to deal with having them have a different worldview. They explain their thoughts to us. We explain our thoughts to them. We do keep each other real because we have to go, okay, we're not all exactly the same. We got to understand each other.
And I think this is the same reason that Democrats need to have Republican friends and vice versa, is that occasionally you say something really stupid, and you're more likely to say something really stupid if you're always living in an echo chamber.
Yeah. Right. So to sum up, again, if you're the kind of person, if you're the kind of atheist who, like us, doesn't come from a religious background and weren't ritually abused or abused by your religion, I'd say go out and try and make some theist friends. Not to convert them, but just to, like our show, to just get the atheist viewpoint out there. And just to show them that we're normal people. And, you know, if you can. Like I said, this is not something I'm trying to dictate to the community. I'm just giving people an example of how I do things. And I'd love to hear how other folks do this, to be honest with you. And I have to say it, because I haven't actually mentioned by then, hey, the hench, I love you guys. Love you guys a lot.
That's sweet. And, you know, we're going to be posting about this on the blog, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
Excellent. So everybody, if you have anything to say about this, how to be friends with a theist, share your experiences, go to askanatheist.tv. You can read the blog post, comment on it. We also have forums. So if you want to discuss other things, you can click the forum button and have all sorts of wonderful communication with people who are both alike and not alike.
I hope so.
It's kind of one of the reasons we love this group. Well, it looks like we are getting to the end of our show here. I can't believe this hour has gone by so fast.
All right. Our host was Deanna Joy Lyons. My name is Sam Olvey, and with me is Mike Gillis. Our music is by Chris Coleman. Our production assistants are Rebecca Friedman and Darren Garvin. Our post show is at Doyle. See you there. Ask an Atheist is an NEDM Media production. Our voicemail number is 206-420-0997. And you can see us online at askanatheist.tv. Talk to you guys in an hour.